Greetings, all you 99%ers. This is your host, Dr. Jack Rasmus. This is Alternative Visions. Okay, last week we started an analysis here and explaining the Greek debt crisis, you know, the anniversary of the last third Greek debt deal with the Troika, Troika being the European Central Bank, European Commission, IMF, who imposed this $400 billion-plus debt load on Greece. And once again, if you want more detail on that topic, do take a look at my blog, jackrasmus.com. I will post an article here on PRN that I recently wrote for Telesur on that topic as well. But I have a book coming out next month called Looting Greece, The Emerging New Financial Imperialism. Take a look at that. You can access that from my blog, jackrasmus.com, or go to Clarity Press. And they are my publishers on this, and you can take a look at the book in great detail. But we're going to continue discussion of that. You know, we talked about the origins of the Greek debt crisis, particularly in the formation of the Eurozone itself in 1999 with currency union, banking union, and so forth, which put Germany and its allies in the catbird seat here, controlling the whole situation. That's why the Eurozone has done so poorly economically, but Germany has done quite well. All right, and it's not just Greece that's been the problem of debt and banking crisis, but it's the whole periphery. It's a imperfectly constructed free trade currency banking union zone. Okay, where we finished up last week, though, was we started talking about why did Syriza lose? Why did Syriza lose so seriously here? You know, they come into office in January of 2015. With a program that was designed to roll back the austerity and restructure the debt and give Greece some room to grow out of its depression, because as we indicated last week, the economic depression in Greece is a direct consequence of the austerity measures imposed upon Greece. Of course, it has its origins in the early part of the 21st century, the first decade, where Germany and northern banks loan all this money to the private sector. But then we have the crash in 2008-9 everywhere, and then all the private debt gets bailed out and transformed into government debt. So that's the beginning of the Greek debt crisis. But then, you know, the crash itself has an effect of raising government deficits and debt, as it did everywhere. So that adds to the debt. But then the Troika comes in 2010 with its bailout deal, which really exacerbates the whole situation in current terms of Greek debt and makes it even worse and piles debt upon debt and piles in more debt to pay the interest on the old debt, because now you got a depression in Greece after 2010. And it's been in the economic depression ever since, because austerity really causes the depression to deepen. And then the Eurozone falls into double dip recession 2011-13, which makes it even worse, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, the lion's share of the Greek debt is imposed by the Troika on Greece, and it's the result of this severe austerity, although there are other contributions to the debt that preceded it. And now, you know, Greece, being in depression, can't pay the debt. The principal and interest on the debt, it's so deep in depression caused by austerity. So they just keep piling on. The Troika does more debt in order to pay the old debt, and it's a unending vicious circle that keeps driving Greece into a perpetual depression. That was our analysis last week. Syriza comes into the picture in January 2015 with the intent of changing this, promises to change this. It says, you know, saying that, look, we need some space to grow the economy. We can't pay the debt the way it is. The Troika has to forego some of this debt payment for a while and allow us to grow out of the depression in order to pay the debt. And this austerity has to be lifted because it's ensuring perpetual debt. And that was their position. And its leaders, Alexis Tsipras and Finance Minister Yanis Varoufakis, were sort of leading this new program. And the proposals they made when they entered into negotiations, you know, they took over the government around January 20th and started making proposals to the Troika here because the old agreement of 2012, debt agreement, was expiring at the end of February 2015. Negotiations began between the Greek government, the Syriza, now Syriza's the party, of reform at the time, sort of a left-center party, a coalition party of various groups in Greece. The previous parties called New Democracy, the business right-wing, totally capitulated in 2012 and 10, rather, and then the other center-right party, PASOK, capitulated in 2009 and New Democracy 2010. They just rolled over and did whatever the Troika wanted them to do and played a key role in, therefore, in building this unsustainable debt in Greece. Well, Syriza comes in and says, you know, we're not going to roll over. We're going to try to negotiate a change. And they made a number of demands at the beginning based upon what they had called the Thessaloniki program. But as it turned out, they too, Syriza, capitulated 6 months later in July. How did that happen? What's the explanation for that? Well, I go into great detail in my book, but let's talk about that a little bit. Syriza made a number of very significant strategic and tactical errors, and they actually ended up agreeing to a worse deal than existed in the 2012 debt agreement that the Troika simply wanted to extend. In other words, they ended up making even more concessions to the Troika than had existed before. Well, how the hell did that happen? How did a sort of center-left party that had promised to end austerity ended up agreeing to even more austerity and ended up agreeing to even more debt than they had before? This needs an explanation, both for problems on left organization strategy and tactics, but also to understand the power of the bankers and their political friends in Europe and their willingness to defend this neoliberal regime in Europe at all costs. When we say German hardliners, we really mean not just the German people, we mean the German bankers and their political friends and big business in Germany that runs the show now in this new neoliberal form that's taken form in Europe, continental Europe itself, over the last decade or two. Neoliberalism really begins in the late 70s, early 80s in the U.S., U.K. Europe is slow to make the transition, but they do starting in the late 80s, early 90s with the European Union, the customs union, a trade, free trade, goods zone. Then in 1999, they add the currency union, create the euro, and they've been struggling and moving towards a banking union. But see, when you have a banking union and a currency union, whoever controls the central bank, the European Central Bank, ECB, really controls it to its advantage. And whoever controls the currency controls it to its advantage because the currency is issued by the central bank. Well, the Germans and their allies have captured the ECB and did from the very beginning. It functions according to, their strategic interest, their economic interest, because the ECB is not really a central bank in the true sense of the Federal Reserve or Bank of England. It's a bank that's composed of a coalition of national central banks, and there is a council of central banks in the 19 Eurozone countries. Based on votes and so forth, they determine what the ECB does. And if the Germans and their allies control the votes, they control the ECB, control the currency, and everything operates according to the to Northern Europe and German advantages at the disadvantage of the periphery of Europe. And the German coalition, I guess we should call it, comprised of those finance ministers. There's a council in the European Commission of finance ministers who drive that policy economically, and then there's this council of national central banks that drive the ECB. And the German coalition is made up of the Germans, the Dutch, and Baltic and East European smaller country allies who depend on Germany economically and in other ways. So they're going to do whatever, the Germans want. Wolfgang Schäuble is the head of the finance ministers in Germany, and he's the big shot there, political economic big shot, who kind of dictates what this alliance, this German alliance, is going to do within the EC and within the ECB. And the Germans have dominated. And they dominate and the policies they pursue benefit Germany, and often at the expense of creating big imbalances of money and goods flows within the Eurozone, and thus at the expense of the economies of the periphery. And that's why we see these periphery economies, unstable and in deep trouble, and their banking systems are very unstable and fragile. Greece being the worst, but Italy being a big problem as well. And Spain and Portugal, Ireland, so forth, none of them have really sufficiently recovered, only tokenly in many cases. And Greece is the worst example of the lack of recovery. It's the smallest economy and less able to defend itself and negotiate against a unified troika dominated, by this German alliance. That's the economic political fact of what is the Eurozone, as they call it, right? So a very powerful alliance and a very unified alliance. They don't break ranks much amongst themselves. Little disputes once in a while between Mario Draghi, the chair of ECB, and the German alliance, but it's quickly smoothed over. Sometimes, as we've seen in the Greek debt negotiations here, some elements within the European Commission, the EC, balk at some of the hardliners, but they eventually fall in line, and even the IMF part of the troika tries to resist this dominance, but they always fall in line as well. They may not. IMF may not. I've articles written earlier this year predicted the IMF may want to get bought out of the troika as far as Greek debt is concerned. We'll see whether that happens. There's an important meeting in September, and my prediction is the troika, the Germans, will agree to buy out the debt of the IMF, which isn't all that large right now, and assume that debt under the European Commission's ESM fund, which is the big fund bailout here as far as Greece and these other countries are concerned. ESM standing for European Stability Mechanism. Okay, but that's an aside here to the main story. And the main story we want to explore here is, why did Syriza fail so miserably? Was it just the lack of resolve by its leaders, Alex Tsipras, You know, was it a personal psychological thing? Did he just cave in psychologically? Were there other reasons in terms of Greek politics that were responsible for the collapse of Syriza's opposition here? What's going on? What went on? Well, you know, I've got 5 chapters dedicated to all these negotiations and events in my next book. This book, Looting Greece, I refer to, covering the period from late November 2014 as Syriza comes to power and through the capitulation to the Troika that occurs, which we'll talk about shortly, in July 2015, and the final third agreement that's negotiated in August, about a year ago, and then even the continued concessions and retreat by Syriza ever since then, most notably last spring here, 2016, when they agreed to even more austerity. Okay, is there going to be another Greek debt crisis? You bet. Yeah, it's not over. There'll be a fourth. We'll talk about that shortly. But let's turn back and talk about this more important question of Syriza's errors, strategic errors. And both strategic and tactical errors that Syriza made that I believe explain why it collapsed. The collapse, of course, is not simply due to Syriza's errors, and it's certainly not due just to individuals like Tsipras and Varoufakis, although they contributed to the collapse, I believe. There are objective reasons for this collapse. And they need to really be understood, because Greece is a harbinger of things to come. As I argue in the last chapter of my book, what we see in Greece is the emerging of a new form of financial imperialism. Now on the periphery, even in the advanced economy regions of the global economy. Financial imperialism is extracting wealth from smaller countries that join these free trade zones, these currency unions, these banking unions, this centralization, globalization going on everywhere. There's a rush to create these free trade zones, whether they're the European Union or a NAFTA in the U.S. or TPP in Asia. China's trying to do it. TTIP, in Europe and the U.S., goods unions called customs unions, free trade zones of goods and services, are the first start, but the next step is to create a currency union, a dominant currency within that customs union. That was the euro in 1999, and you can't have a currency union without some kind of banking union, because it's the central bank that issues the currency. In Europe we see this sluggish evolution towards a true bona fide banking union, which is part of the source of the problems over there. The Germans don't want a real banking union because it would pass the authority from its coalition of central banks, national central banks, to a true bona fide independent overarching central bank. They don't want that. But they're being dragged towards that slowly. And then, of course, you evolve of necessity. You have to evolve to some kind of fiscal union. You can't have a banking union only, because you get these imbalances like we see in Europe that can only be resolved with a central force offsetting the imbalances and instability with fiscal spending. But the Germans don't want any fiscal spending, you see. That would mean giving up their influence and control even further. So financial imperialism begins this way with these customs and banking and so forth unions, and it allows these larger dominant economies to dominate the smaller economies in the unions. We see that, of course, in extreme in the case of Greece. But to the extent that we have this unification and these unions being created by capitalists globally, bankers and leading capitalists We're going to see more of this financial imperialism. And what is that? That is extracting wealth from a country, not at the point of production, which is classical imperialism and colonialism. It's a new form of colonialism. I call it economic protectorates. Taking the wealth out of these countries by means of debt and interest payments. You see, it's much more efficient to create a state-to-state interest extraction, debt and interest extraction, that the workforce and non-capitalists have to pay for with austerity, than it is to go after wealth extraction, the point of production, simply by company by company. You see, it's a new form of state-to-state financial wealth extraction from these countries, that the money flows back to the core powerful dominant economies. And that's what's happened in Europe. Recent study by the European School of Management Technology, I think I referred to this last week, indicated that 95% of all the debt and interest payments from all the loans, 400 billion plus, made to Greece, has gone back to Northern Europe, core Europe, Germany and its allies, bankers and investors. 95%. I mean, you know, that's the smoking gun. That's the proof that Euro neoliberalism and all this debt is really a form of creating a financial wealth extraction, the benefits of which accrue to the bankers, investors, and businesses of the center, of the core, you know. This is classical imperialism and colonialism by a different name. And that's the significance of what we see in Greece. Anyway, my last chapter in my book talks about the new financial imperialism as a conclusion. But I want to get back again, having digressed, to why did Syriza lose? You know, what went on that ended up with Syriza collapsing, capitulating totally? Well, a number of real strategic errors were made by Syriza. First, Syriza and its leader, Tsipras Varoufakis, believed that they could be the spark that resurrects European classical social democracy. They immediately sought to support their position, allies within Europe, elsewhere in Europe, among the social democratic forces in Europe. You know, social democratic parties in those few countries where you had social democratic leaderships, like in France and so forth, they thought that they, Syriza thought, that they could elicit their support as allies, and that together they could turn around Euro-neoliberal Europe, you see. It's a bit of a misunderstanding that European is social democratic. It used to be. Europe is firmly neoliberal, and the neoliberal interests are championed and promoted by these new pan-European institutions. You know, the European Central Bank, the European Commission, and others, ESM Fund, etc. Right? These are the institution instruments of neoliberalism in Europe, and it's firmly entrenched. And the Germans and their friends are benefiting in particular from all this. And social democracy is on the wane. Vestiges of all that exist. I mean, can you really call Hollande, François Hollande's socialist government in France social democratic anymore? Well, they're turning on their own workers and forcing labor market reforms. In other words, less job security, less wages, and ending the unions and so forth. You know, social democratic traditional parties and movements never would do this, and of course they are doing this right now. And then in Germany, you know, the SPD is, you know, a junior partner in the Merkel conservative neoliberal government. And we can go on, you know, down the line and show how much of classical social democracy split, and a significant portion of it over the decades has migrated as junior partners to neoliberal capitalist parties. And Syriza thought that they could ally with these social democratic vestiges, remnants, and that it would be enough with their support to outflank and roll back the German allied hardliners. You see, the hardliners were the ones imposing the debt on Greece and saying, thou shalt pay no matter what. We don't care how austerity wrecks your economy. You're going to pay your bills. Right, and we're going to keep giving you bigger bills to pay, make sure you can continue to pay the older bills. And don't talk to us, Greece, about any kind of space you may need to stimulate your economy to grow out. We don't care about that. We just want you to pay, and the money has to flow back to our banks, even if we got to loan you the money to pay our banks. You see, it's really a banking crisis behind all of this in Europe. European banking system is on life support and has been for quite some time. And these flows, these financial flows from debt loans have to continue because they really are subsidizing northern European banks. The thought of Syriza was, let's ally with social democracy, right? And we will together resurrect Europe, you know. Together we will push for more fiscal spending and infrastructure spending and independence. And as a Eurozone-wide program from which, you know, we in Greece would benefit as well. Well, this is naive to think that they could roll back to neoliberalism with the remnants of social democracy, which were weakening at every stage anyway. And Syriza, particularly its leader, Tsipras Varoufakis, who were leading negotiations, embarked immediately upon taking office of a tour of European capitals to try to elicit this, mobilize the support for social democracy. You know, they went to France, they went to Spain, Italy, and so forth, and they talked to other social democratic parties, and they even went to the UK, you know, to talk with the Labour Party and others, see what support they could get there. You know, it was kind of a wasted effort, predictably. You know, those elements within the European Commission, there were social democratic liberal elements there, you know, Jean-Claude Juncker and others, and they tried to elicit their support as well. This was the foundation of the whole strategy. But as it turned out repeatedly during negotiations, and at the time of capitulation in July in particular, social democracy allies that they thought they had collapsed and fell in line with their more numerous and more influential hardliners, German hardliners and so forth. You know, at the in July, the collapse came. There was, I'm getting ahead of myself a little bit, but in July 2015, Syriza held this referendum vote to reject the Troika's last offer. The vote, surprisingly, came out in favor of rejecting the Troika's last offer. Well, you know, you would have thought that Tsipras and Syriza would say, okay, we have this no vote, let's go back in and make some new proposals and some new demands, you know, to lighten the load here of austerity on the Troika. Well, what Tsipras did was just the opposite. Even though he got a no vote, you know, he turns around and he sacks his cabinet ministers a number of them, and fires a number of them, and then proposes a counter-proposal that accepts the Troika's last position and submits it. I mean, just the opposite. You know, talk about democracy, what good's the referendum if you ignore it and turn around and do just the opposite. Well, that's what he did. The social democrats in the Troika, oh, they really, you know, as soon as he made this concession offer, they really praised it. They thought, oh, now we're in a position here to deal with the hardliners together because we got this no vote by the Greek people and we got this further concession statement by Tsipras and Syriza. Let's propose this so they'll go to the Troika and the Troika, you know, squashes them. You know, says, no good, no good. Even though you're accepting our Troika proposal of last week, Schäuble and the Germans and the hardliners say immediately after the referendum vote, even though you're accepting that, you know, we got a new proposal that's even worse than the one we proposed last week, and you just accepted. The Social Democrats, the Junkers and the Dijsselbloems and others, just fall in line with the Troika immediately and say, oh, yeah, we changed our mind here. Greece and Tsipras, too bad. Yeah, you're going to have to accept even worse, you see. That's an example, I guess, maybe the strongest example of how the Social Democrats are just a ghost in Europe here. And it was a strategic error of major proportions for Greece depend fundamentally on rallying remnants of social democracy in Europe to support its position, and that's how they were going to get the hardliners to lift austerity. Big, big mistake. Okay? That wasn't the only mistake that Syriza made, however. You know, if you look at what else went on during the negotiating period from roughly February through August of last year, Syriza made a number of other major errors. One was, as soon as it came in office, it did not insist that the loans to Greece under the old program, the 2012 debt agreement, which was being extended, they agreed to extend it beyond the old agreement as is beyond February 28th. That was the demand of the Troika. Extend the old while we continue to negotiate. Okay. Syriza agreed to do that, to extend it, without getting any concession in turn from the Troika for that extension. Big strategic error. Another error, right? And if you agree to extend it, then the loans under the old agreement that were due to be provided to Greece during the negotiating period should have been paid by the Troika to Greece, right? I mean, if you agree to extend the agreement, then the terms that call for further loans to help repay, you know, the debt and keep Greece afloat during negotiations should have been provided. Ah, but the Troika refused to provide those loans. They wanted Greece to agree to an extension of the old agreement as is, and then they turned around and immediately violated that agreement and that extension by saying, no, well, we're not going to give you the loans that are due. All right? Well, Greece and Syriza should have taken a hard line at that point and said, a number of things they could have done. One would have been, okay, yeah, we revoked the extension. And, of course, that would have raised the question of whether Greek payments under the old agreement, due in April and May, should have been paid by Greece, you see. And it was a quid pro quo here. You won't give us the old loans? Why should we make payments on the old loans if you won't continue to extend the old loans? By collapsing on that point, Syriza really sent a signal to the Troika that they were confused, they were weak, and they could be pushed around. And, of course, the Troika then subsequently began pushing them around and bargaining quite a bit. Right. So it was a big mistake to agree to extend for 4 more months the old agreement and not receive the loans on the old agreement and continue to pay the debt and interest on the old agreement nonetheless. Right. This began a series of concessions by Greece and Syriza to repeated demands by the Troika to implement further austerity. While they were negotiating, Syriza, Greece, kept increasing the austerity on itself, agreeing to these demands. Every time the Troika say, well, you want to discuss some of the things you want, but first you got to implement the demands, austerity here, our positions. So Greece would go and implement austerity, but then, the Troika would say, oh, well, that's not enough. We got some more we want you to implement. In other words, the Troika kept moving the goalpost here during negotiations, and Greece and Syriza kept agreeing to play by the rules, making repeated unilateral concessions without any concessions in turn from the Troika. All they would get would be some unofficial, informal suggestions from their friends, so-called social democratic friends in the European Commission, if you make these concessions, maybe we can get the hardliners to concede on this or that. Well, that kept going on and on repeatedly, and nothing actually ever happened. You know, the Junckers and others within the EC could not deliver. This was a Troika strategy, a hard cop, soft cop, very typical in negotiations. We'll talk about that shortly. Another problem was, error that Syriza made, was during this whole process, of course, as negotiation dragged on and it didn't look like there was a solution, the Greek banking system began to collapse. What happened was wealthy, Greek oligarchs and people who had money in savings in Greece started withdrawing this money from the banks and then sending this money offshore, guess where, to German and the other banks in the north. Small savers, didn't have this option. But big businesses and wealthy investors and bankers, Greek bankers, did. So we had withdrawals undermining the Greek private banking system and capital flight out of the country, and Syriza didn't do anything about this until June, you see. And that only collapsed the banking system even more. And this is where the other element of the Troika comes in, the European Central Bank, which has power and controls and dictates the Greek Central Bank. You know, it's not as if the Bundesbank, the German bank, which isn't controlled by the ECB, it's, the source of power behind the ECB. But in Greece, you got a little small Greek central bank. And that was pretty much totally under the wing and control of the European Central Bank. Well, what the European Central Bank did while these negotiations were going on and all this bank withdrawal and capital flight was going on, what the ECB did was to refuse to pay interest on Greek bonds it was holding, Greek government bonds, which under the old agreement, once again, old debt agreement, 2012, it was required to do. It simply refused to do it. In other words, it was repeatedly breaking the old terms of the old deal while the Troika was insisting that Greece implement the old deal. Not only were the loans that were due to Greece under the old agreement not being provided to Greece, but the interest on its own Greek bonds that were supposed to be paid to it were being refused to be paid. At the same time, the Troika was saying, "Oh, you got to pay the April and May debt deals coming. Debt payments coming up. So you got to pay, but you're going to have less and less money to pay, and at the same time, money is flowing out of Greece and undermining your banking system." Well, this is what the ECB wanted to do, you see. ECB wanted to bring the Greek banking system to a halt and put even more political pressure through that economic collapse on Syriza for even more concessions, right? Syriza, repeatedly agreed to make payments to the IMF and the ECB. It focused on trying to get the EC, the European Commission's debt loan to Greece, as the focal point for debt relief. They said, Syriza said many times, we'll continue paying the ECB and the IMF. We're not going to renege on that. And they focused on the EC. Well, that's, in the EC, they thought they had some liberal social democrat support, and they could get that debt restructured. Of course, they never did. Another major strategic error was Syriza, Tsipras, Varoufakis. All of them kept saying, "Oh, we're never going to leave the eurozone. No Grexit." Grexit means Greek exit from the euro. "Oh, no, we want to stay. We're going to stay in the eurozone." They kept repeatedly telling the Troika that that's what they were going to do. You know, they weren't going to leave. Well, that was a big error, you see, because that was, you know, really one of the main ways that they could have put pressure on the Troika to make some concessions in turn. But they didn't do it. You know, they wouldn't do it. In fact, they did just the opposite. You know, that's like saying in union management negotiations, oh, we're never going to strike, we're never going to strike, we're never going to walk out, but please give us this and that, you know, concession and proposal and so forth. But, you know, if you don't, we're not going to fight, no. You know, I mean, there are a lot of parallels here to union management negotiations, and I talk about them in the book. But this idea of no, we want you to negotiate a deal and give us some of our meat, some of our demands, but we're not going to strike you, right? Because Grexit would have been the strike, you see. another error was Syriza stood by and did nothing while the ECB slowly shut down its banking system, right? In fact, it continued making payments that it didn't have any money to make, squeezing state and local governments to you know, scrounge up the money to make the payments on the debt, and agreeing to not pay pensions and so forth in order to make its payments to the IMF and the ECB, while they stood by and watched the ECB slowly shut down its banking system, right? Not only refusing to disperse loans and interest it was due it, but these emergency loans called the Emergency Lending Assistance Facility was being shut off step by step as well. Well, what Syriza should have done was immediately nationalize his banking system and take it away from the ECB control, right, and run it independently. What they could have done, too, Syriza, was to create a parallel currency even before exiting the euro. This was quite possible, but for reasons that we'll explain shortly, that was not even considered, not even planned for. Right? Syriza could have also put pressure on the Troika by suggesting it might leave NATO if there was not some help. That would have certainly gotten U.S. attention. Or cut its military spending in support of NATO. You know, this eventual third deal amounted to $98 billion in additional debt imposed on Greece and, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars of continued and worse austerity measures. But part of the deal eventually agreed to last year was to increase military spending by $600 million. Yeah, so, you know, they could have put pressure by at least implying that their membership in NATO was up for consideration. During the negotiations, Tsipras also went to Russia and talked to China about getting loans. Nothing really came of that because his positions were quite fickle with the Russians. You know, he could have supported, and in fact, they did at the very beginning when they came in office. They made an overture to Russia, they Syriza, by saying that you know these sanctions should be lifted on Russia, sanctions relating to Ukraine that the Eurozone was imposing. But they quickly backed off of that. You see. Immediately, within weeks. They say, oh, no, that's not what we meant. And then he goes to Russia after showing he's fickle on all this, looking for Russian loans. But we don't know the terms and conditions of discussion there. But, you know, the Russians, I'm sure, with Tsipras on again and off again in discussions with them, weren't going to jump in the middle of these negotiations and on the side of a fickle Tsipras and Syriza here and bail them out. Syriza could have also made a significant overture to China by requesting to join the Asian Investment Industrial Bank that was just formed, or requesting to join the BRICS trading zone. But they didn't, of course. And then, you know, most notably, there was this big refugee crisis from the Middle East occurring at the time. Nothing was said and done by Tsipras and Syriza to try to put pressure on the Germans and others for its cooperation and the refugee crisis. Nothing, right? Tsipras and Varoufakis were always fearful of a Grexit, and they never planned for Grexit. Varoufakis called it too complex to try to figure out how a new currency could be established. Well, there are all kind of templates internationally for establishing and reforming currencies, not so complex. And instead, Varoufakis' proposal was called a Plan X, which, you know, I won't even go into details. It was ridiculous. Okay. Tactical errors were made by Tsipras and Syriza as well. You know, one, as Varoufakis, you know, an academic, alienated some of these Troika bankers by lecturing them in his tours. You know, they wanted him out, right? It wasn't so much that they didn't like the way he lectured them. It was that, you know, asking Tsipras and Syriza to remove Varoufakis from the bargaining team, which Tsipras did in April and May, was really a test case, you see? A test case meaning, oh, if we can get them to remove people we don't like on their bargaining team, that's a show of weakness. You know, one thing in union labor management relations you never, ever do is you never change your bargaining team at a request of the opposition, because that's a test to see how much they can push you around. You know, the opinion, the position is always, look, we have our people here. You have nothing to say who we bring to the table, right? And, you know, as a union contract negotiator myself many times, you know, that has arisen, and you immediately must throw that back in the face of the management team and tell them, you know, to go screw off here. You know, you have nothing to say. We don't say anything about who you bring to the table. Don't tell us who we can bring to the table. Well, you know, Tsipras conceded on that point and removed Varoufakis in April from the bargaining team. And then Varoufakis kept trying to, you know, influence negotiations by throwing these position papers the end of a boat here. you know, he kept floating these position papers, confusing, you know, what was the position of the government here, the negotiating team, or his position, and so forth, which wasn't very smart bargaining, right? And then we get this other strategic error at the very end, and the way the referendum vote was worded, you see. The referendum vote, putting it to the vote of the Greek people in early July, was simply, do you reject or accept the last position of the Troika? You know, in June, the Troika had issued its last and final best offer, you know, and that's always a signal when a party says our last, final, best offer, we're not going to make any concessions unless you show us you know, some new leverage on your side that we can't ignore, right? This is as far as you're going to get with friendly discussions. And if you want to be believed as an effective negotiator, you must insist that the last and final best is the last and final best. You cannot move off of that, because if you do, none of your other positions will be believed. So anyway, the referendum, instead of saying reject the offer and exit the Eurozone, Grexit, simply said reject the offer and go back to the bargaining table, you see. It was a weak wording. It's like saying, again, using the analogy of labor negotiations, it's like saying we're going to take a vote of our membership of our union, and we're going to ask them to reject your last offer, management, and at the same time authorize the leadership to strike. You say you reject and you authorize the same time to strike. You don't split those two votes. You can't have a rejection and then just go back to the bargaining table. Because so what? Go back to the bargaining table. You know, the opposition isn't going to respond to you at all. You have to reject and authorize the strike. Well, there was nothing of that in the wording of that vote. It was just reject the last offer of the Troika and go back. Well, you know, as it turned out, the vote was a significant no vote. There was a rejection of Troika's last offer. 62% of Greek people voted to reject. But there was no authorization to Grexit as well. So all Tsipras could do was to go back and say, oh, look, we want you to negotiate again and agree to some concessions. Well, he then undermined himself immediately, because as soon as the no vote came in, he fired half of his cabinet and fired the Varoufakis as well, you know, those who were opposed to the concessions. And you know, he's given a signal to the Troika, look, I'm going to be much more amenable here. And in fact, he turns around and he immediately agrees to the Troika's last offer. He fires his cabinet, Varoufakis, and then he crafts a counterproposal to the Troika's best final offer of the previous week, accepting it. And then, you know, his social democratic allies in the Troika cheered him. They said, oh, this is great. Yeah, okay, you're accepting the last offer. We have agreement. We support you, Greece. We support you, Syriza. It looks like we got an agreement. Well, they didn't get an agreement, because 2 days later, the hardliners, led by Schäuble, said, no, we don't accept your acceptance of our last position. We want more concessions from you, even more. Oh, wow. You know, that's what happens when you don't take a strike vote with your rejection of the last offer, you know, especially after 3 months where the Troika knows they've got you on the run and you've been backing up concession unilateral after concession, and they know you're collapsing. Well, why should they, just because you take a vote to say go back and negotiate, why should they negotiate and agree to anything more? Well, you know, look, our final offer was our final offer, Schäuble and friends told them. And in fact, you know, by taking this vote, you really pissed us off, and we're going to make our final offer even worse. And that's exactly what happened. And the Social Democrats, who were supposed to be allies of Greece and Syriza at the time, what did they do? Oh, they collapsed again, and they fell from their support of Syriza's position. They fell back and agreed with the hardliners, you know? I mean, that's how reliable Social Democrats are. Right? You can't trust them. You know, liberals, can't trust liberals, right? They will flip-flop, you know, whatever their interests are. And that's exactly what happened. And Greece further capitulated. Tsipras further capitulated. You know, now he's expunged his supporters. They're out of the picture. Half of the, you know, the supporters, the left of the Syriza, which is a coalition of groups and parties from the very beginning. And now, you know, he totally loses his nerve. And then it was just a mopping up operation for the Troika. And between July 13th and August 21st, when the final third deal was agreed to, more concessions were actually made. Okay, and that's how we get to the third debt deal. Now, what happens to Syriza, and what happens to Tsipras? Well, Tsipras is now a center-right leader, and Syriza is now a center-right party. You know, it's expunged itself, and it becomes moves towards a kind of junior partner in Greek Euro neoliberal alliance with the Troika. It's been tamed. Syriza has been tamed. And that wasn't the end of it. You know, over the next year, further concessions are made that, you know, I talk about in the book and so forth. It's just a general retreat that goes on. Tsipras and Syriza hold another election, parliamentary elections, and because of the splits that exist, he ends up still in government, but with a center-right government now, with the support of the former right parties, PASOK and others, and the New Democracy, and so forth. So, you know, all these political oppositions now are tamed in Greece and going along with the Troika, right? Now, you know, an important thing that needs to be added is that Syriza doesn't want to exit Grexit, because neither do most of the Greek people want to Grexit. They labor under the false delusion that to remain in Europe, which is what they want, they have to remain in the Eurozone as a junior oppressed partner. Well, that relationship is a misconception, right? You can still be European with your own currency. You don't have to be part of the Eurozone in the currency to be European. But this holds back the whole development in Greece and enables the debt problem to continue and enables the financial imperialism to continue. So, you know, objective factors here play a big role. The Troika itself was very, very strong, stronger than it was in 2010 and 12. You know, no recession, no global crisis and so forth. And now they had these big loans that they could bail each other out. They have QE at the central bank and so forth. So, it would have been very difficult for Greece to fight the euro. Eurozone Troika by itself, which it ended up doing, you see. Once it could not get any support within social democracy, that was the beginning of the end. No matter what Varoufakis did tactically to annoy his counterparts, no matter what Tsipras did, there was no way without a broader insurrection against neoliberalism that little old Greece could have changed this very much. And public opinion, of course, in Greece plays a role here. You know, a lot of Greek society does not want to abandon Europe, the euro, because they got investments in the euro and they're going to lose money because, you know, they move to a new currency, it's going to be even less. So, This public opinion issue and the Greek people themselves are partly behind why there was no Grexit, and in a sense, Syriza was just reflecting that. But with proper leadership, they could have, which they didn't do, they could have better educated the Greek people what was at stake and what really needed to be done. But Syriza didn't do that. Syriza remained largely a parliamentary party, and that's part of the problem with what turned out there. But there will be new political formations, popular formations, that inevitably will rise in Greece, hopefully learn the lessons of the past. And next time around, I predict it won't be so easy to tame the next political opposition. Anyway, that's the analysis of Greece and the deep Greek debt crisis, which is a reflection of a broader crisis in the Eurozone and European banking system, but also reflects this new financial imperialism that's taken root in the periphery of Europe and that we're going to see elsewhere begin to emerge in the 21st century as well. Okay, next week we will return to the U.S. and look at the Sanders movement and Trump, the taming of Trump, Sanders' OR revolution, and Hillary's ghost. Jack Rasmus, Alternative Visions.